bothers me. Black is the pit from pole to pole. I think whatever God's may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeons of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Do you train like a savage? Do you enjoy looking, smelling, and feeling your best? Are you tired of companies that don't align with your values and charge exorbitant prices for their lackluster grooming products? If you answered yes to any of these questions, well, Gentleman Badass is about to be more than a podcast for you, my friend. Whether you're rocking a full-on lumberjack beard or a stylish stubble, Gentleman Badass has you covered. Our premium beard products are carefully crafted with the finest ingredients, giving your beard the nourishment and hydration it deserves. Don't have a beard? No problem. Gentleman Badass also offers body spray to keep you smelling fresh, as well as tattoo polish that heals new tattoos and keeps existing tattoos looking their best. As I would hope you already know, Gentleman Badass is more than just a product line. It's a way of life. Our community of like-minded gentlemen savages will empower you to embrace your inner badass and exude confidence wherever you go. Head on over to thegentlemanbadass.com and join the tribe by signing up for our mailing list and receive a 20% discount off your first order. Gentleman Badass, beard, body, and style, savagely refined. All right, welcome back to the Gentleman Badass podcast. My name's Josh. Got Mick here as usual.
Hello, hello.
And today we have got Adam Briley. So Adam is a client of mine. I've known his name for a long, long time. My wife works in real estate. Adam is in real estate. And he's recently, in the last year or so, started doing jiu-jitsu. Got to know him a little bit better through all of that. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about real estate, about entrepreneurship, about martial arts, all that fun stuff that we like to cover. So Adam, thanks so much for being on here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. So let's go back and start at the beginning. Tell us about kind of growing up, what you were like as a kid, maybe some key moments in there that may have shaped the Adam that we know today.
Yeah. So I grew up here in Omaha, Ponca Hills area. So my dad actually still lives there to this day. And three younger sisters. Was going to the Ponca Elementary, ended up going up to Fort Calhoun Schools, smaller school, which allowed me to get into like all the different sports, right? Class of 42. And I think when I was younger, I really didn't have a ton of like true motivation, didn't really know what I wanted to be, that sort of thing. My buddy of mine convinced me my sophomore year getting into wrestling. And I was kind of like the chubby, you know, unmotivated kid, right? And got into wrestling and then I really enjoyed it. And so I did that for, you know, the rest of high school. And I never really like had great technique. I was just always had like the stupid strength. And that's how I was able to beat the guys I beat, you know. But it's that actually once I got into wrestling, that is what gave me my motivation. I mean, that was like pivotal point right there. Boom. The rest of it just like took off. That's when I was like, man, I can see my abs. What else can I do? You know, and so then going through high school, my dad's been in real estate for, gosh, 38, 37 years. So it just kind of made sense that, you know, I first got in real estate because I was going to school, I was going to college. I actually have 18 credit hours left to graduate from UNO. Mm. I ended up dropping out because I started selling real estate. And when you start making six figures as a 20-year-old, you start like really figuring out like, I really need to go to college. Like, what am I going to go to? What am I finishing this mm-hmm, for? So mm-hmm. That's when I dove all in real estate. And the reason I really got into real estate in the beginning, I won't hide this from anyone, is I knew what my dad made in a year, like in one of his better years. And I'm like, gosh, he made that much money. Like, that's what I'm going to chase. So first 5 years of me selling real estate was just chasing the paycheck. Mm. That was it. Met some awesome people and then it was just constantly like chasing, like, what can I do? And then it turns into the business aspect of it. Of, I mean, there's so many things. You can be a single agent, you can run a team, you can run it like a business. So I pretty much maxed out every credit card I had from like 20 to 25 on coaches, seminars, going to different things across the country and figuring out like which direction do I want to go. It actually got so bad because I was spending so much money on that sort of stuff. And then in real estate, you basically buy leads. You know, it's a credit. There's all these different services. Like most people have heard of Zillow, right? Mm-hmm. You pay to play. The more you pay them, the more deals they're going to send your way, or more potential deals. And I would say when I was about 24, I got to the point where I was like, man, I'm a little in over my head here financially. And I had just started dating my wife at the time. And I pretty much told her, I was like, well, I know we just started dating, but I just want to let you know, I might have to do a bankruptcy here. And she was like, well, I guess that's that. And I was like, man, she's like, that wasn't the reason I married her, by the way. But I was like, yeah, that's kind of cool. She's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So I didn't do bankruptcy. I went and got a $50,000 loan from my grandparents, got me out of my hole. And I've paid that back in like 3 years. But the reason I always bring that up is just because, you know, whenever you're running a business, you can sometimes dig yourself into a big hole, but you learn a lot. And that's kind of why I liked it. And then fast forward to now, from like 25 to now, we were like the Navy SEAL team. So, you know, you add a team member, you bring in more business. Okay, I got to bring on another team member to help take on buyers or sellers. And every year, you know, we would add more people. We got to what I call the Navy SEAL team, where there's about 10 of us selling, and we were selling about $100 million of real estate. So high volume for a low number of agents. And then a few years ago, when COVID hit, my wife and I, you know, you can get burnt out like in anything you do. Mm-hmm. You're like, gosh, what am I doing this for? Like, what's the point? Like, because it's so transactional. You get to meet a lot of great people, but it's very transactional. And my wife and I, we were at the point, and my wife is very integrated into our businesses. Like, I would not be where I'm at without her. And then there's a whole story with that too. But we basically, COVID hit. All right, this is our opportunity. Shut up shop. I mean, literally, I was processing my head, because as a team, you don't really make a ton of money on a team. I'm in production, so I go out and sell, and that's how I live the life I live. And so we were going to shut the doors, and I was just going to be a single agent, simplify things, and get rid of all that. And I'm kind of competitive and a little too much. And my wife and I, many nights of like, okay, what do we do? What should we do? And then we finally were like, screw it. Let's go all in. Let's create a billion-dollar team. We want to do $1 billion of sales in 1 year. And I hired Kobe Sway, who runs our team. And then you add ancillary. So I own a mortgage company, a title company, an insurance company. You had all these ancillary businesses, because when you're selling 1,000-plus homes a year, it feeds those businesses. Sure. Mm-hmm. And now in that 3-year period, we have about 50 agents that sell on our team. And then we have 2 insurance agents. So home, auto, you know, casualty, all that. Mm-hmm. And then we do mortgages. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4 loan officers and title company and our real estate agent. So, and I'm still in production. I actually like production. So I don't do much with running of the team. That's Kobe. And then my wife has a flipping business. So kind of fell into that by default, because you guys ever see the cheesy signs or the letters that say, we buy your house cash, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, 5-6 years ago, I was on a listing appointment. He's like, yeah, Adam, I think I'm going to just sell it to one of those investors. I'm like, well, I can make you like a lot more money, even paying my commission. I can put quite a bit more money in your pocket. And they're like, yeah, I know. It's convenient though. It's what we want to do. I'm like, shit.
I want to be that guy too.
Yeah. Like, why not give both options? Yeah. Right. And so we've always had a Your Home Sold Guaranteed Will Buy It program, meaning, and when the market's good, it doesn't really matter, because you don't. And what that is like, hey, listen, if you list with us, we will guarantee that your home will be sold and under contract within 6 months, for example. And if it's not, we will step in and buy it. And then it gave that protection. So remember, we all know the 2008 crash, that when that happened, that was like a really good tool for folks that were like, they had to make this move happen. And so we put that into place 12 plus or 15 years ago. And we've always had that. So I'm like, okay, I do that. And then that guy had got me thinking there, why not just give instant offers to folks? So then I started going into it wearing two hats, the investor hat and the real estate agent hat. But I always care about my real estate agent, my brand, my reputation more than anything. And you're held to a higher standard ethically when you're buying them as investments. So, hey, the typical investor might give you 50 to 70 cents on the dollar. I'm substantially more than that. Yeah, I don't make as much when I go and turn these, but I care about my reputation. I'm doing good by you as the client, and I'm giving you guys a good tool or a good option for you to just take the easy route, convenient route. It's your time, move out. And that's been a huge part of my wife's business. So she, I think this year she'll probably pump out about 50 to 60 homes.
Wow.
Last year she did 75. The year before it was like 75. So
wow.
Cranking out a lot. And her secret sauce is she has an awesome crew, like amazing crew of like flooring, electrician, plumber, the whole nine yards. Is she's ruthless with me, like holds me to a super a standard, right? Which is what you want as a husband, as much as like we butt heads. But she pushes me to challenge myself to get better. But she's like this super kind woman, and like these contractors just love working with her because she doesn't get worked up. I'm the super irrational guy. It's one of the many reasons I wanted to get into jiu-jitsu is because I got this like internal rage in me at times, and I wanted to try to control it, and ego and pride, and I deal with all that. Like I think a lot of men do. And she never gets worked up over anything. Like she gets all this stuff thrown at her, and she's like, it's fine. We can handle this. No big deal. And it's cool, calm, and collective. I'm like, how the hell do you do this? This is bullshit. So yeah, that's like kind of bird's eye view, fast track of what we all do. But we found that I'm finding myself, I'm buying more houses right now than I'm actually listing and selling for folks right now. Like, I think just this week alone, we put 8 or 9 under contract just to purchase. And then we either talk, a lot of them are holding. You know, we're not buying them at a big enough spread to turn them into a flip. So we're just keeping them as a rental. And then what I do, so this is probably the coolest thing, is I partner with agents on my team. So if you come in and you join our team, and like this is like the path to building your net worth as an agent on our team, is like, hey, it's one thing to be very transactional and sell, and you can make a lot of money being a real estate agent. I mean, I have some agents making pushing $500,000 on my team. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys are in their 30s or in 20s to 30s. I mean, you know, but again, you're just making money. So then you start figuring out like, what's your passion? Like, what's your why? Like, why are you really doing this? Otherwise, you're just going to get this burnout. And then also adding the building your net worth, because I see it all the time where agents work. They spend all their money, whether it's cars, watches, whatever. And they're not like investing it properly. So we bring a lot of our agents in and we'll just partner with them, whether it's a flip or an investment or like a rental. And we do it 50-50 with them. Hey, if you help find the deal, we're going to bring you in. Stacy pretty much runs the show, and the other agents, their value is finding it, helping set things up, that sort of thing. Maybe it's chasing down a tenant's rent from time to time. And it's just a way to like help them, like add another piece of the pie for them to help build wealth. And we do that probably, there's probably 7 of them that we consistently do it with right now. So that seems to be something that I'm really enjoying probably the most right now.
Almost like mentoring, but also with a financial aspect to it, where you're actually helping people build their businesses. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. And my mentoring model is I actually got pulled out of all real estate, all team duties. I show up like once a week to our team because, I'm very passionate. And so sometimes that comes across like very irrational on my behavior as well too. But, I try to lead by example. So like, that's my mentorship, is just like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm out here grinding it out, trying to get my next deal for my real estate sales, then also trying to find the next deal to potentially purchase as an investment to build our portfolio too.
So I'm curious to kind of go back, you talking about the money that you invested in yourself, albeit on credit cards or whatever for training, and was it worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, people ask me that all the time, like, if you could go back and do it all differently. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, I think of all the stuff I learned, you know, like, I think when for me, when things are going really, really well, like everything's going smoothly, that's when I tend to become complacent. So I tend to, I almost self-sabotage in a way. Like if things are going too good, I purposely try to screw some up. To then I for it forces myself to learn. And my wife sadly operates similar to that way too. She didn't used to. It's just like we had an investment. This was years ago. We had a huge investment payoff. And so we had this large sum of cash. And most people would be like, or there's a lot of people would be like, oh my gosh, yeah, this is awesome. And I would say within 2 months, all of that money that came in, I had it in other places. And it pushed us. Like I wasn't buying boats or anything like that. I mean, I do have a boat, but I wasn't going and taking that money and going and buying like luxury things. It was, all right, let's push this and see how far we can grow that money. And it put us in an uncomfortable place. Like, I mean, you were puckering up like, oh man, I can't believe I just did that. Did I make a mistake here? And, you know, fast forward, it's like most of them were really good. It just grew it that much more. So it really helped. But tend to put ourselves in uncomfortable situations. But again, that's why I think I like jiu-jitsu so much. Like, you know, I think when I started rolling with you, you start rolling with some of the bigger guys, like you brought up Austin earlier. Like, he's a big guy. And then he's doing a smash pass on you, and you're sitting there and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm claustrophobic. I might die. I need a tap. And then the more and more times that happens, it's like, oh, this ain't so bad. I can hang out here.
You just get used to the pressure, or, the, you know, not just pressure as in physical pressure, but just mental pressure.
It's mostly mental.
And I had actually the same, along the same lines. So you said it was, I don't know if it was a year or whatever that you were going, doing all this coaching. Was there something specific in there that really stuck out as valuable? Was there a certain course, a certain teacher, books that you read that that stuck out as more valuable? Or was it the cumulative of everything that kind of helped you? And then kind of as a corollary to that, when did you decide, okay, I've learned enough, now it's time to start doing more, putting this stuff into action?
Or was it just the debt that you were like, okay, fucking pump the brakes here for a second. Let's see if I can put this stuff to work.
So I always try to learn. Like, I'm always trying to like put myself in a situation where I can learn. Like, I have a real estate coach, and I pay him $5,000 a 45-minute call. It's pretty pricey, right? I had a business consultant where it was a six-figure contract per year for helping us like put things into place to help us grow. So I'm all for investing my money to help us as myself grow. I would say probably the biggest thing that has been the most pivotal for me is like going deep with myself. So gosh, 3 years ago, roughly, it was the time when I kind of gave up control of my team, and I kind of, all right, Kobe, it's yours. See where you go with it, sort of thing. And, I didn't know it at the time, but I started dealing with major anxiety, panic attacks every night. I mean, it starts getting dark out. I would start getting terrified of what was coming, because I knew it was happening. I went to the hospital 4 times in 1 year.
Is this after, right as you're giving up control of your company? Yeah.
And I wasn't processing that. You know, I wasn't. So I go to the hospital first time. You tell someone like, I think my heart's going to explode. They get you in there right away. They start checking stuff. They don't mess around. You feel bad because there's people waiting, and you're like, okay, sorry. And every time they're like, listen, we kind of think you're having a heart, we think you're just having panic attacks. I'm like, no, not panic attacks. I'm in anxiety. And, you know, so I went through that for like probably a good year. I got on like Lexapro, which I'm not on any prescription right now, but like it kind of really messed me up even more. Like put me in like a very numb, not so great state of mind. I get it's good for some folks, but for me, it just, you know, I almost became like, just like a zombie sort of thing. And then, I got a really good therapist. So I try to stay consistent. I'll go to my therapist once a week.
Okay.
And it's nothing. There in the beginning, we talked about some deep stuff, childhood stuff or whatever I got to go through. Right. And then a lot of times it's just like processing, like what I got going on. And it's just like the little stains. And now, like fast forward to now, like I think everyone feels anxiety or pressure of some sort. And like, you know, sometimes I start feeling that heart flutter. I'm like, okay, I analyze where I'm at, what's going on. And immediately I control it and I go. So I'm starting to like figure out myself and like process where I'm at. That was probably the best learning thing. Because, you know, in sales, just going and chasing, you're putting your head through this brick wall. But, you know, so that was like, that's probably the most important thing near and dear to my heart. Because I do know there's a lot of people that deal with that kind of stuff and they just don't want to talk about it because it's like a very vulnerable place. And especially, I think men deal with it more of the times than not. But, yeah, the learning thing, I'm always reading. I either read my Bible or I'm reading my some sort of like self-help type growth book, you know, like, you know, you got Tim Ferriss, you got Malcolm Gladwell. Outliers is probably one of my favorite books. It's all about the 10,000 hour rule. Like once you put in your 10,000 hours of training of some sort, that's when you really become like an expert. Or, you know, you got Darren Hardy, who's the compound effect, where it's, you know, you put in this work now and it just slowly
builds and builds. And builds.
Yeah. You know, and I think we all just overcomplicate shit so bad. and sometimes it's the smallest, littlest movements on a daily basis that move the needle the most. And then you look back at you're like, wow, I really come a long way. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answered that, but that's kind of.
Yeah. No, because you'd mentioned that you were so close to being done with college. I was the same way. I was in college and then landed the job that I was going to college for a year before I graduated. And I was on a student visa. I wasn't getting any kind of scholarship. I was paying everything. Now, back then, I think it was like $99 a credit hour at Bellevue College or something like that. But I was like, what the fuck am I doing this? Like, I've just landed the job that I'm going to school for. Like, they're not going to give me a raise if I wait another year. And so I just bounced and never looked back until recently when I thought maybe I should see how long it would take me to finish my degree. And I had like 21 credit hours to finish it. And so I started looking at doing evening classes and I was like, nah, it's not going to get me anything. You know, like I could read books as long and get more out of that for myself that could, you know, spur me forward than
sitting in a classroom. I think though with that though, it almost, if you do it in a classroom, it's forcing you to do it. I mean, so that could be the advantage of doing it in the classroom because then, you know, like you're like, okay, I signed up for this.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah. I might as well do it. And I'm learning something too.
Yeah, I always just wanted to be a rock star. So the only reason I went to college was to find a band. So once I found my band, I just left music. And I've started college and dropped out, I think, 6 different times.
Really? Like,
probably 6 different majors. And I just realized, you know, most of what
I've been in 6 different bands.
Pretty much. Yeah. Mostly what I wanted to do, I don't really need a degree for. You know, if I was going to go as a lawyer or a doctor, I need a degree. But, you know, what I'm doing now, you know, well, one of the things that kind of I've mentioned in the podcast before, I used to work at TD Ameritrade. And one of the things they said on their application was, you know, you need to have a 4-year degree preferred, right?
Yeah.
I still got the job.
Yeah.
I still kept the job. Out of my class of 40 people, I was one of 8 that actually passed the test and got to keep the job after we were done studying. And then at some point, I was sitting next to a guy with a master's degree and $70,000 in student debt.
Yeah.
And we were doing the same job, making the same money.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know. I kind of feel like I've had this minor, not chip on my shoulder, but like, I just feel maybe lesser of a person that I didn't have a college degree. I've had that feeling, but I've kind of gotten over that.
This is kind of on topic a little bit, but I just had, do you have kids?
Yep.
What ages?
9 and 11.
Oh, yeah. See, you're just beginning.
Yeah.
So my eldest just turned 32. And he just had his birthday 2 weeks ago. And so he calls me. And normally our calls are just like, how's everything? Did you see the game this weekend? You know, it's just the normal stuff. And I'm like, how's everything going? He's like, yeah, good. But I don't know. I kind of need to talk to you. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I've never heard him, you know,
serious.
Preface something like this. And I'm like, oh, man, his girlfriend's pregnant. Or, and he goes, I feel like I'm at a crossroads. And I was like, okay. And he goes, you know, I came to Colorado to work in the weed industry. I've done everything that I can do in the weed industry. I've done everything I wanted to do. He goes, but I don't know. He goes, I feel like I need to change and do something else. I said, well, how much do you make a year? And he said, $52,000. I was like, what? $52,000 at 32? You barely finished high school. I'm like, you're doing pretty good. I'm like, I don't know what you're going to do. Like, that's going to be like a pivot when you've gotten used to making that kind of money.
Yeah.
Like, with no degree and all of that stuff. Other than what I told him was sales.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, sales, you don't need it. You just need personality and you need hustle, which he's got. And he's like, I don't want to do sales. And I was like, well, I hate to tell you, son, I don't know of anything else that's going to be living in this $52,000 a year lifestyle that buys you.
Yeah.
And then you're going to walk away from a really good job and start over.
So he just wants something more out of life.
Yeah. And it's like, I would be the first person probably years ago to go, fuck it, burn the house down, just do it.
Yeah.
And now that I'm older and it's my kid, I'm like, hold on.
Yeah.
Don't fucking burn the house down. Yeah. Maybe burn the room down.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just interesting how your perspective on challenges and all that kind of stuff will change sometimes as you age. And then when you have young kids that you're taking care of, the risks that you would take as a newlywed couple with no children are probably far different than you would take right now when you're looking at these little mouths going, oh shit, hang on, this isn't just about me anymore.
Yeah.
You know, your perspective kind of sometimes changes with some of these decisions as you age and you take in, whether it's people on your team or, you know, there's always seems like there's more mouths to feed and it changes some things.
Yeah, it's a pressure, but it's, I get that.
Well, kind of along the lines of family, you mentioned how your wife was really pivotal in helping you achieve the level of success. And you said that's a whole other story. So what does that story look like? Where's her, where does she come into all of this?
Like my wife, as far as like what she... Or sorry, what do you mean by that?
You just
that?
Said she was very pivotal. There's the whole other story about how your wife is very ingrained in your business.
So first of all, when we first got together, I was a little bit lost, and it's kind of ties in a little bit. You know, I'm not one to push faith on anyone by any means, but I'm a Christian, and when I met Stacy, I was very like, I was a drifter. Okay. There's no point. I was just drifting and I was chasing money. And we got together and she's, listen, I just want to let you know, like, I go to church and this is important to me. So I'm like, okay, like, I'll go to church with you. I went, I'm like, man, this is good. Like, this feels good. Like, what, this is something about this. Like, I think we all feel like no matter what, it's just like, I know a ton of millionaires and some of them, there's always like a missing void. They're always like, you buy all this shit, you go on so many vacations, and there's always something missing. And what I've learned, it's God. And that's, to me, like what helped me with that empty void feeling. And that's to me the number one reason why that was a huge point for her. Like, she got me back on that track to like going back in my faith. Now I've definitely gone sideways, and to me, that's part of being a Christian. Like, you're not perfect and you're gonna mess up, and you're gonna mess up a lot. Like, I mess up daily and I'm constantly asking for forgiveness, and like, dang it, like, I messed up again on this, like, please help me with this. And definitely not perfect by any means, and But that was a huge point for me, like internally and like feeling, because again, there's always this, like this feeling void, like what's, there's something more in life. Like we're always like chasing something, right? And that there's like a comfort in that when you're like, when you're in that. And then to business. So I had a falling out with, I had a gal who was on my team. She was, I mean, she was a great asset, but we, she kind of did everything. She controlled my books. She, I mean, literally I can't go, I can hardly go change the dang laundry. You know, like it's every, I'm a master at delegating and it drives my wife nuts because she's a doer. Like she's just, she's a workhorse. She's a doer and she will outperform me 10 to one. I focus on like three things and I just try to do those three things really good and that's it. Everything else just goes by the wayside. And now I've added jiu-jitsu in there. So she's like
four things.
Yeah. No. And, so she basically, she took control of like the books and like, and managing our money. And she's just a good sounding board. Like, I'm really struggling with this. Like, what do you think? And like, she has solid advice. Like, I mean, honestly, if I listened to her every single time, I would probably be in a whole nother boat right now, like in a much better boat. If I truly listened to her and her advice in that moment, the funny thing is, you know, I go to therapy on a weekly basis and it's kind of like, sometimes just like two bros talking. That's kind of what therapy is. And, cause I'm not a good talker. I'm not good at going deep emotions and all that. It's uncomfortable for me. And all the advice he gives me, my wife had told me all within the last 12 months. It's always been that way, right? But sometimes you fight like wanting to listen to your spouse a lot of times. I know I do. And but she's just a good business operator. And so I'm kind of like the visionary and she's a really good operator. And so that's why her and I together are just awesome components. And she's integrated in our team. Like no decisions get made without Stacy and I first talking about it. If it does get made without her involved, generally it's the wrong one. And I don't mean that in a, like she gets mad. It's more like, yeah, we probably shouldn't have made that decision. And she's like, well, if you would have talked to me, I could have told you this, this, and this. Oh yeah. Okay. That's probably right. And so Kobe and Stacy, for example, are constantly talking on the team stuff. Which direction should I go here? What should I do here? And I mean, she probably spends a good 2 hours a day talking to people associated with our businesses of like just that stuff, not dealing, not to do with like family stuff, flip stuff or any of that. It's just dealing with, she's very integrated that way. So first it was the faith. Then it was getting integrated in our business. She was a hairstylist and she did really well. She had a great book and I just slowly start chipping away to like, you want to get into this? You want to get in this world? She got a real estate license briefly. I mean, that lasted like, 6 months, she realized like, okay, I'm not going to sell. This isn't for me.
Yeah.
You go sell. I'll take care of the back end stuff.
You did the same thing, didn't you?
No. Yeah, well, I got into real estate briefly and I realized I couldn't stand it. Oh. I you know, my wife is awesome. She's a realtor as well. She's awesome at her job. And we were going to team up. We tried to team up and I'm kind of bummed that I let her down in that situation, but I realized I was never really going to be good at it. I didn't really want to be good at it. And I didn't know, or I didn't realize that I didn't want to be good at it until I was actually doing it. So that was kind of it for me. But, you know, I think that brings up a good point about, you know, a good relationship. You know, 1 + 1 doesn't have to be 2. 1 + 1 can be 10 if you put the right two people together and actually work together and try to do that. One thing I'm interested in talking about, there's an entrepreneur I follow, Naval Ravikant. And he said, if you're going to do something, go big. Because he's like the guy that manages three restaurants. He's got three Italian restaurants. He's probably working 60 to 80 hours a week. He's maybe making $60,000 to $100,000 a year, maybe, depending on the restaurants. He's like, Elon Musk is working 60 to 80 hours a week, and he's making billions of dollars. And you mentioned you're a master of delegating, and you also mentioned that you've got all these businesses. Some of these businesses, I met you less than a year ago. Some of these businesses are new since that point. So how do you go about going big? How do you go about finding the right things to go into? How do you delegate? How do you look at that when you're looking at a new venture, or how you've looked at these things in the past?
Yeah. So, I am, a master at chasing shiny objects. So I first want to say that. It's probably one of my bigger weaknesses. And that's why I got the financial trouble I got years ago. And I've rode in the financial roller coaster many, many times.
I think every entrepreneur has.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah. There's times where we're like, okay, how are we going to do this? Oh man. And I mean, think of now, like what's going on right now in real estate sales. Sales have plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were selling three a day. We're selling maybe like one home a day right now. Or 1.5 homes a day where, mm-hmm. again, it was 3 to 4 at times. Mm-hmm. So number one thing that we've done is I keep it relevant to what we do. You know, it's an ancillary, it's an add-on to what service we already add on and do. And then it's definitely, Kobe is a huge proponent of this, of putting the right people in place to help run those. Now, we make mistakes. Like, just like we bring an agent on, or we had to walk out our main insurance agent just the other day.
Mm.
Like literally walk him out the door.
Mm.
And I wish them well, but like if it's not in line with what we do, or yeah. financially it's not making sense, sorry, you gotta.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I and Kobe will make tough decisions on cutting things or adding things or cutting people if we need to. It's just how it is. So we're okay making those tough decisions. But it's just like, making sure that we're meeting like on a weekly basis to say, okay, what's going on here? Where are we at with this? Where are we at with this? And just doing that check-in versus before I would operate like, oh yeah, you got this. And then I wouldn't check in for like a month or two. Mm-hmm. And that's when just shit was just going all over the place, wasn't functioning, all that. But when we do these like daily check-ins, essentially every single week, it just lines up with the overall goal. But yeah, it's just, and some of it's just kind of like happened. Like for us, like our ancillary, it made sense to do it, mm-hmm. too. Like because we want to give a white glove service to our clients, right? Hey, you come to us, we can get you lined up with a mortgage. You don't have to use our people, mm-hmm. but we're going to give you it as an option. You can use our insurance agent, our title company, our real estate agent. Like it's a one-stop shop. That's the whole idea,
mm-hmm.
is what we do. My wife and I are always looking at like, is there businesses that we can look at buying? Because I do think, and there's a lot of data out there, the baby boomer shift is going to be the biggest shift that's mm-hmm. happening mm-hmm. with their houses and with yep. their businesses. And a lot of them, sadly, with their businesses, they don't have, their heirs don't want to take over their businesses. So they don't have anyone to take over these businesses. So I do think there's a, I don't want to say play, but I do think there's a play mm-hmm. there to take over or buy businesses that would be beneficial for the baby boomer type that doesn't want to do it anymore. They're like, hey, I want to enjoy my time now with my mm-hmm. grandkids or whatever it is. That's always in the back of our head. But again, then it would go back to what are key people that we have in place to, that will run it.
Yeah, that'll get the job done.
I mean, that's no different. You brought up Elon Musk. Like, that's no different than him.
Right.
He just has the key people in place. And he's, you know, he's right here. And then he's, okay, this is the vision. This is where we're trying to go. And then you almost like create, you almost like have this reverse, I call it a cookbook. And it's a common term in real estate, for example, is, okay, here's your big goal. And you break down everything to a yearly, quarterly, monthly, weekly, daily thing that you got to do that lines up with your overall mm-hmm. goal. So,
yeah. So more specifically to real estate, let's say somebody's looking at real estate. Let's say I never got into it and I'm trying to decide if I want to do it. What, I wouldn't necessarily say advice, but what are some key characteristics that someone should have that's going to make them good or potentially make them poor at real estate?
Yeah. So, I'm laughing because we have an accountability coach on our team. Her name's Janelle. She's freaking awesome. And she's been in real estate for like 17, just as long as me. Just Mindy and I and Janelle, we've all been mm-hmm. here about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knows. And so she is our accountability coach that just meets with our agents on a daily basis, like helping them like, okay, where are you at? What do you want to accomplish personally in business? And she asks us like,
you know, can I be involved with the interviews with when Kobe's interviewing people? And the funny thing is like, it's a crapshoot. I mean, there really is no, like, I could line up 10 of my top agents and they all have different characteristics. They all do it differently. And they all take great care of their clients. They have that in the same mm-hmm. realm. They're all ethically, morally sound. But as far as like their personality traits, how they do it, what they do, mm-hmm. totally different. Hmm. And there's people that will come onto our team. So I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah.
But I will come around. There's people that come on our team and you're like, oh man, are they going to have what it takes? And then they just come out and like guns a blazing and they kick ass. Amanda Sway, who is actually Kobe Sway, who runs my teams. Amanda's been on my team for like 10 years. When she first started, she was in the office every day doing what she was supposed to. I don't think she sold a house her first year. Mm. I don't think she got a paycheck. It's probably 9 to 12 months before she got her first commission check. So literally was in there. Just doing the things. And a lot of people would have been like, hey, you should probably just give up. Every day she was in there doing the things she was supposed to do. I'm like, this will eventually pop. And fast forward, she's consistently been a $10 to $16-17 million producer, huge mm-hmm. producer. Mm-hmm. And but she doesn't complicate things. She just does the very basic things that she has to do every single day. And it has this compounding huge effect for her. What I tell people when someone calls me and says, hey, I'm thinking about getting into real estate, you have any advice for me? Like, I have a client, his son is getting into it. So of course he calls me and he'll probably join our team. And I go, listen, his name's Aaron. I go, Aaron, this business can spit you up, chew you out. Just, it's like any sales job, sure, in my opinion. And I'm like, you have to be willing to take the no's. You will get rejected a lot. You are the punching bag a lot of times for clients. This can be very emotional for the client. So then therefore you're the punching bag, mm-hmm. and you're kind of like a therapist at times too. Like, you know, you have to have this tenacious, not get offended. I mean, there's times that I'm the therapist for our team members, because mm-hmm. they're going like, gosh, I'm dealing with this, and this. Like, how do I get through this? And you kind of have to have that, just like, okay, there's going to be times where this really sucks, mm-hmm. like really sucks. Or you're getting a call at 10 PM, like, hey, I want to write this offer up. I mean, it's a good thing. Right. But like, man, I was ready to go to bed. Like, yeah. Or it's the weekend and you're like, I want to go and look at houses. And so you don't, your first few years, you don't really have a personal life. Mm-hmm. So I almost try to discourage people. Cause I'm like, you will get shit on a mm-hmm. lot. Lots of rejection. A lot of people think like, oh, real estate agents make all this money. I mean, you can, but that's like, I want to say the statistic, it's like, what is it? 10% of the agents do 90% of the business. Mm-hmm. Some yeah. crazy statistic like that.
Yeah.
I mean, your average real estate agent makes 30 some thousand a year.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, and there's kind of been this pervading idea where like, oh, you should just get your real estate license and do it on the side. It's an easy job that you can kind of do, you know, you could be a mom and be a part-time mm-hmm. realtor. And it's just, I mean, it's like any profession. You have people who are really, really good at their job that take really, really good care of their clients. And you also have people who just kind of do it for a paycheck here and there. And then, I mean, you know what it's like dealing with those people. Yeah. You know, I call them
COVID agents right now.
Yeah. Well, we're probably going to be seeing less and less of those too, because it's, you know, the last, what, 2020, 2021, money was easy.
Yeah.
And I mean, what was that? There was 3,000 some agents. I don't remember the numbers, but it was like one agent per, I don't know, two or three listings. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But when the money's easy, lots of people get in. As soon as the money gets hard, they start to fall out.
At Speaking least that's of what money, I've seen. Maybe you can, I just read something about, because we bought our house right before COVID. And they said, I just read that if you bought a $500,000 home in 2019, that your mortgage payment is the same as somebody buying a $350,000 home today.
It might be even worse.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's literally the worst time to be purchasing a house. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper. I think that it's cheaper right now to rent than it is to buy by like 50%.
Wow.
So yeah, it's not fun for a lot of buyers.
But what do you think is going to happen now? Because inventory is still staying low.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this barrier around the market. Interest rates, the barrier. Mm-hmm. The moment they start dropping it, all these buyers on the sideline are going to flood it.
Well,
and then we're going to be back to the similar market.
Crazy prices, all the lots are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you haven't been to my neighborhood in like a year, that entrance now is houses.
Wow.
Huge. Yeah. And like massive houses.
Yeah. You know? Well, and then like new construction was going gangbusters because people, 3% money,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, hell yeah, I'll go build this massive house. And there was people, what really, it really shocked is I had an agent, he's a buddy of mine. He had his cousin building a house and they were going through this build. And he was in a sales job. Well, his industry got rocked. And then construction's getting close to being done. So he bought that based on what the rates were.
Mm-hmm.
The rate had already more than doubled. Mm-hmm. And he's almost making less than half of what he was making.
Yeah.
Comes getting close to time, closing time. He's like, I can't do this. Like, this is terrifying.
Yeah.
So,
well, one kind of last real estate question, we'll move on. So there's, we're kind of talking about ahead of time, there's currently a lawsuit against NAR, which is the National Association of Realtors.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who haven't bought a house or aren't familiar with it, so there's a buyer's agent and a seller's agent. Usually they're two different people. The buyer's agent helps the buyer find the house. Seller's agent helps the seller sell the house. Well, the person that sells the house essentially pays the commission for both agents. The mm-hmm. buyer agent gets paid out of the sales. The seller's agent gets paid out of the sales. Well, there's a group of people saying that's not fair, that the sellers shouldn't have to pay this money and that the buyers should have to pay this money.
Yep.
Which, if you don't understand the business, that seems like, oh, that should be, that sounds
seems right.
a good thing.
Yeah.
Why is that a bad idea?
Well, first of all, on that, I'm not an expert on that lawsuit, so I want to state that. But it's a class action lawsuit. So what's every class action lawsuit? Who's the winners in that, number
mm-hmm.
one?
Mm-hmm.
It's the attorneys. They averaged it out of all the people that were in this class action lawsuit, and they said on average, each person will get like $500 and some.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The attorneys are getting like $15 to $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
So who's the winner?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, yes, it's always been, let's just use simple numbers here. 6% commission, seller's paying that. Of that 6%, let's just go off a 50-50 split. 3% goes to the buyer's agent, 3% goes to the listing agent. Now, some people charge 7%, 8%. There's some people that charge 4%, 5%, and then those splits are all different. But neither there's, you know, and it gets split that way. So you fast forward to where they want this to change, what's going to happen is now the buyer, if they want representation, they have to go to an agent. This is my understanding. They have mm-hmm. to go to an agent and they have to front, come up with that money up front or at this time of the sale, that 3%. You're buying a $200,000 house, which let's be real, there's no $200,000 mm-hmm. houses these days. But you know, so now you got to come up with an extra $6,000 just to have representation. It's gonna hurt these buyers.
And these are people that are having to come up with down payments. They're yeah. having to come up with potentially repair bills and all that stuff. So
yeah, it's I don't see it being a good thing. Now maybe I'm biased, right? But I don't. I think what's gonna happen is there's gonna be a workaround. Mm. I think there's gonna be an additional addendum that pretty much states, hey, as long as seller, you're willing still, because you're going to open it up to more ready, willing, and able buyers mm-hmm. that want representation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's going to be a separate addendum that pretty much states, now it's already in the listing contract now, but it'll probably be another form mm-hmm. of, like, we have a wire fraud addendum, we have all these, when I first started, it was a legal piece of paper, front and back, was a purchase contract. Now, my average contract packet is 19 pages long.
Mm.
So I think it'll just be in another addendum that gets added in there. And because I think as a seller, you have to start analyzing like, okay, well, if I only pay the one commission to the listing agent, am I going to hurt myself by not offering a commission to a buyer's agent that where that buyer wants to have representation?
Mm-hmm.
And then you could even say, well, that buyer will just call that listing agent directly. Well, gosh, the listing agent now has to do double the work for a lower amount. Like, mm-hmm. it's it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And the seller's agent represents the seller. The seller can't really represent a buyer
exactly
as well.
You know? Mean, you can, but who are they really representing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, for me, I mostly represent sellers.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, my team represents tons of buyers. But so by default, in my head, I'm used to just representing sellers. So I'm just going to want to, I have that ingrained in my head and in negotiations and all that. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, because then a buyer is gonna be like, well, who is looking out for me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want that representation.
Yeah.
So yeah, it will hurt the lower price homes the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the people who might be scraping by just to make that down mm-hmm. payment, just yeah. to get into their first home, and now yeah. they have to come up with more money. So
yeah,
you know, if you're wealthy buying a house, okay, what's, you know, another check to write? But, you know, the people that probably need the house, and, you know, let's face this, buying a house in the United States, and really that's one of the things that the United States has that a lot of other places don't, is a good real estate market. And that's one of the best ways to grow wealth. That's how I've grown most of my wealth, thanks to, once again, Mindy and the smart decisions that she's made with homes. So enough with real estate. Let's talk a little bit about jiu-jitsu. What got you interested? Why did you decide to come and start taking jiu-jitsu?
So Shay at 88, I knew he was doing it. My buddy Jake Thede has also been doing it for some years now. And, you know, I wrestled in high school and I kind of just had it in the back of my head. And I was like, okay, I should probably get, you know, it's a mixture of like having like this healthy hobby. I mean, I used to drink like every night. Mm. I'd literally stay up on my computer, drink, smoke a cigar, work on my computer. And it's not really healthy, right? Like, you start acting, it adds to the erratic behavior, right? It's like, I need something healthy to like go after. And I have a lot of pride and ego. I'm not going to hide that. And so as I was like looking into it, I'm like, okay, this kind of ties into wrestling a little bit. It's going to be this new thing that now I have to learn. And it's so humbling. Like, you can come in here, I'm 37 years old. You can come in here and there's this 18-year-old kid that can just whoop your ass. And I'm a 230-pound dude. I'm a big dude. I feel like I'm pretty strong, right? Where a kid, I got 80 pounds on him and he's just whooping my ass and he's 18 years old, you know, and he goes and gets in his crappy car and drives away. And I'm like, I just got my ass handed to me, you know, and like, it's super humbling. Like, and I need that at times. And yeah. So it's a mixture of that and like learn a new skill. And plus, like, you know, the world's kind of crazy out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like, I'm a pro Second Amendment guy, right? I like my guns. I like to be able to defend myself and my family. And I think this just is another thing to just tie into it too. Like, so yeah, that's kind of why I got into it. Now I'm like, it's like an addiction
mm-hmm.
where I get mad if I can't get in here 3 times a week. And that's even like, there's guys I know get in here 3, 4, 5, 6 times mm-hmm. a week. I'm like, if I don't get in at least 3 times a week, I feel like my skills start going backwards,
mm.
right? And I'm still white belt, and, you know.
It's a perishable skill.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But what's, you know, he's talking about, like, getting humbled by the young kids. I got to train with, like, some of the legends in the sport.
Yeah.
So I start looking at the other way. Like, I want to be 60 and be on the mats and still be choking out those 18-year-olds that walk yeah. in the door.
Yeah.
Like, those were the guys that I wasn't looking at the 18-year-old because yeah, yeah. my days of being 18 yeah, are long gone. But I know what I'm heading towards. And yeah. I'm like, I want to be that old bastard over there that's still a savage. And just with a tiny little adjustment, he's going to finish you.
Yeah.
That well, was.
And I don't think I've ever rolled with you, but like I roll with Scott, right? Mm-hmm. And how old's Scott? 60?
58, I think.
Okay, 58. So he's almost 60.
Yeah.
And I know I got 80 pounds on him probably mm-hmm. or something like that. Same thing. And I'm like, damn it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always like you said, it's the littlest pressure points or whatever, or tweaks or moves. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I might die right now.
Yeah. Well, like Scott had said on this podcast, he's like, there's no reason that I should be able to hang with an 18-year-old, a 20-year-old and be able to handle them like that I do. But it's all jiu-jitsu. Thank God for jiu-jitsu. And thank God that the technique eventually will help you overcome, you know, strength and athletic ability because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm in my 40s now and I feel like I'm still in pretty good shape. Honestly, probably some of the best shape of my life. But I can tell things are starting to slowly fade away. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really glad that I focused on getting that technique solid. And I can see how that will be a savior down the road. So what do you, I don't think you've competed yet. Have you?
No.
Are you wanting to, or?
Yeah, I don't, I think I'm intimidated.
He says that like he hates the thought of it.
Well, yeah. I do, but like, I think I'm like, so I know I just got to go out there and do a competition, right? Mm-hmm. And someone was telling me about this, like when you do that and you commit to it, like you train harder, you process it more, and like you actually learn more during that process than any time. So, and that makes total sense. I think for me, it's probably like this intimidation thing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'm a white belt, and you know, and I know there's lots of white belts that could compete, right? But I'm like, I want to know more. I want to learn more. So mm-hmm. it's just like me not signing up to do it yet. And so I'll admit it was probably more intimidation than anything. And that's probably the only reason.
Well, I asked about all the coaching and stuff you did at the beginning, because I had a realization a long time ago. Like I got into reading, and I was reading probably 2 books a month. I was reading a lot. At least a lot more than your average person. And I realized kind of the end of the year, I looked and I'd read like 30 some books. Mm. And I'm like, I read a whole lot about doing stuff and I didn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
I read about doing stuff. It was almost like the reading was a nice excuse. Oh, you're reading books. That's really, you know, noble of you of reading books. Nice. But then I wasn't actually getting anything done.
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay, next year I'm going to read half as many books and I'm going to do
more. You're going to put them into place.
Yep. So with that, and you also talk about kind of thriving in chaos or making things difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing about me, I like things to be very, I like my freedom. I don't like stress. But I know that once that stress dial is turned up, it forces me to focus and it forces me to get good at the things that I've been slacking on otherwise. So, you know, with the competition, it's for some people and it's not for others. I did it quite a bit at the beginning, and then I haven't done it for, it's been going on a decade now since I've competed. Part of that's because I need my body and my arms and my hands for my job. Mm-hmm. You know, back when I was sitting at a desk talking on the phone, it didn't matter if I dislocated my shoulder because I could still talk on the phone. But now that I play guitar, or at the time, you know, when I kind of came to this realization, I was working on cars and I'd done a seminar. I went a little bit too hard. I hurt my left shoulder and I hurt my right elbow and I couldn't work for a week. And I'm like, I need to make this, I need to figure this out. But that I will say, some of the most stress that I have felt is the lead up to a competition. Probably like the most scared, the most anxiety I've ever had is leading up to a competition.
I believe that for sure.
But once you get into it, like I found when I was competing very regularly, that anxiety kind of faded away.
Yeah.
So I recommend it to people. But I also feel good in the fact that Fabio at a seminar, he said, you know, get in there and compete for a while, but then stop. He's like, don't be like me. I did it too long and now I'm all broken and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Guilty!
So, yeah. Yeah, so I guess I don't want to take
up. Here I am sporting a black eye.
Yeah, really.
Actually, yeah. A couple of days after this happened, a friend of mine stopped by the gym. I haven't seen him for a couple of years. He was bringing his kids in. And so he went to the front desk and was like, is Mick around? And they're like, yeah, he's on the mats. And so he walks in and I'm on the mat strangling somebody. And I turn around and I'm like, Mickey! And he goes, when are you going to stop?
Yeah.
Like this. Like yeah, he's like my mom or something.
Yeah.
I said, the fifth of never.
Yeah.
I go, I hope I am doing this. I hope I drop dead on the mat.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't want to stop. But you know, the way you train changes, and certainly competition seems like so far away of a thing for me now. But
yeah.
I still like the, you talk about like, I never experienced the nervousness, but the discipline, the accountability to train for a tournament, there's no price on that. Like
yeah.
it's just, you learn so much about yourself. Like if you're a lazy bastard, it will absolutely show
when you
commit to a tournament.
Yeah.
Especially if you're competing with other people within the gym.
Yeah.
And they're showing you up because of their training and how often they're in here and all that stuff. And then you realize like, wow, man, it's not good enough.
Yeah.
Like tournaments will do stuff like that. I think the more you train, the less fear
yeah.
you have. It's almost like you're dying to go out and
Show it off.
Yeah, I believe that.
Let's take this thing around the track. Let's get to really see what it does. But yeah, I do miss the accountability things that training for a tournament did. Like you have so much more discipline in your life when you're training for a tournament.
You're applying that pressure and internally too, I think, right?
And you know, if I screw this up, if I drink this beer, if I eat these chocolate chip cookies, like it's going to come back and punish me in a physical, painful way.
Yeah. Right?
There's actual consequences in the foreseeable future if I don't do things
right. Yeah. I tell fighters all the time that if you're sitting in the dressing room worried, then there's something in the back of your psyche that you didn't do right, forgot to do, slipped up on, slacked off on. Like if you've checked all the boxes, like I said, it's just you're dying to go out there. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you don't even care if you win or lose, really. Like you're just like, this is the crescendo of all of that training and you just want to let it go.
Yeah.
But if you cheated along the way, then those are the thoughts that kind of fuck you up. Like, God, that one morning I was supposed to get up and run and, you know, my wife told me, oh, just stay in bed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those are the things that will chip away at your foundation. You know, I think Muhammad Ali has a quote, something like, it's not, I'm kind of paraphrasing this, but it's not the miles ahead. It's the pebble in your shoe. Mm. And it's that little thing that can just fuck you up.
Yeah.
In your mind and competition is just like a little microorganism of life itself. Like the struggle that you want to have through life, you'd like most of those things to be self-inflicted, that you can control. Mm-hmm. The ones that you can't control that are thrust on you are the ones that break some people or, you know, get you feeling anxious and having panic attacks and those kind of things. But all this stuff is voluntary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's making you do it.
Yeah, totally.
You know.
So moving forward, jiu-jitsu, business, all, you know, life in general, what are some of your goals that you're striving for? You talk about, you know, when it comes to real estate, you've got your yearly goal, monthly, weekly, daily. What are you hoping to accomplish maybe by the end of 2023, which is a couple months away, 2024? What are you hoping for or looking at?
Yeah, so tactically, it's just probably getting more things. So the thing that I try to do is really just making sure that I'm checking in with people intentionally to, okay, where you're at, what can we help with? Like, what are you struggling with? That sort of thing. And then the more I do that, like just things just seem to go so much smoother and they just, things grow so much quicker. And then also realizing like, okay, I can't just step away and things can, and I find myself in that position where I like, oh, it's taken care of. It's good. Mm-hmm. And then that's when things get a little sloppy. Probably the biggest thing is actually just helping my wife get through, like she has a ton of projects, a ton. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to take care of the clients that I personally have. And I'm going to help my wife at home and then on her business side of things and just take some weight off of her. But things, as far as like anything new, we're not going to like add anything new. It's just a matter of like, as the market tightens down, it will continue to do that, whether that be a next year thing or who knows? It could be another 3-4 years before rates start coming back down. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone.
Is that your prediction, you think?
Before I was thinking it's presidential election next year. Like they're going to drop the rates to make everything seem a lot better than, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't know. The more I read on it and talking to different people, they're like, I don't know. They feel like, okay, we're in such a bad place, they can't drop the rates. Mm. Like, because they still haven't gotten inflation under control. And, you know, so there's a lot of people that think it's going to be March of 2025 before we start seeing rates drop. Mm. I don't know. It's just like when COVID happened, no one thought that was going to happen with the real estate market. Mm-hmm. No one.
Yeah.
Like, we were all preparing for like, we're going to see 30 to 50% decreases in our business.
Yeah.
And then look what happened. Mm-hmm. It was insane.
I was preparing for 30 to 50 days.
Yeah.
I'm paying these guys. I'll just stay home. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you're like, oh, I had 2 weeks in my head. We were in Florida when this, mm-hmm. when they just announced it. And we're like, oh, let's just extend our stay and stay down here. It's only going to last a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
2 years later or whatever. For me, it's trying to simplify things more. And just seeing what else can I simplify. It was probably the biggest thing that I'm trying to focus on. You know, we've been talking about doing this podcast. We'll probably start recording content here soon. And Kobe's a master networker. He talks with real estate teams across the country. And Kobe Sway is actually known in the real estate community across the country. Mm. He's on, you guys know who Zillow is, right? Mm-hmm. So he's one of 20 people on the Zillow advisory board. It's kind of a big deal to be on that. So he has like first knowledge of what's coming down the pipeline from Zillow. And so one thing that's definitely in near and dear for Kobe is coaching, and, you know, too. So we'll definitely add a piece of that too. That'll probably be the next thing we add next year sometime. But I would say just simplifying, trying not to complicate things too much. What can we simplify to help streamline things? You know, I think it's terrifying, but I'm also fascinated with AI a lot. Mm-hmm. I use ChatGPT a lot to just help me on, like, okay, I had a client or a prospective person send this type of message. Here's what it said. Here's how I want to reply. Here's the tone I'm trying to go for. Spit something out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, stuff like that. It's just like little things that make it easy. And you know, there's like video editing software, like you do podcast stuff, and like you can throw that into, like, there's so much AI stuff out there that just makes sure it's not going to replace the relationship part of it, which that's what I love. It's going to help me just do my job better and do it more efficiently.
Kind of like it just takes the busy work.
Almost, it's like having 100 assistants.
Work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think the other thing too that always goes through my head is the baby boomer shift. I know there's a big play because it's a needed thing where baby boomers moving from their bigger houses to assisted living is a lot. That's a big shift happening right now, and there's a big demand for it. And so is trying to figure, like, how can I be a resource to them? Would be a thing too.
Okay.
Yeah. I got one quick question. How do you recruit your talent?
So, you know, the nice thing for us is, like, when you get to our size, like, it just is kind of easy that way. But what Kobe does, Kobe does all of it, is you guys heard of Indeed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, he uses Indeed for, and that will bring on a lot of, like, new agents, like, newly getting their license. And we have two VAs that are over. We actually have quite a few VAs that are over in Philippines, and they're part of our team essentially. And they constantly are messaging real estate agents and calling them, seeing if they are happy where they're at. Basically, would they consider making a change? Is where it's at. I guarantee you, Mindy's gotten a call from them at some point saying, "Hey, are you happy where you're at?" Like, but, you know, I don't even know what their script is. Because I personally like these kind of markets when things tighten up, because I make fun of, if you got your license, I'm sorry, in 2019 and newer, you don't know anything about really. I mean, you don't know what tough is, and they've all been experiencing it this last how many, you know, months. But, and so it's when you got to put in the work now, and it's going to be the tough survive, right? So we do have a lot of agents that are starting to reach out that are like, okay, we probably need a team that provides leads. We have a ton of leads and accountability. Like, we're going to push you. Like, and so that's just kind of like when you're selling real estate, or you got to hit the phones to look out to get more people that are looking to buy and sell. It's the same concept. You're calling real estate agents.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, the saying, tough markets don't last, tough agents do, right? And so there's always kind of like, as things are, when the money's easy, lots of people flow in. When the money's hard, only the tough people stick around. And the people like you and my wife and the people who've been doing it for decades, like, they know the good times, they know the lean times, and they have a plan or they have a process that will help them thrive in any type of market. So, yeah, you know, I'm nervous about the market upcoming too. But once again, I've gotten to that point when your income is, at least when my wife's income is all commission based. That's the other thing that a lot of people don't realize about real estate agents. You don't pay your team per hour, right? No. They don't make money unless they're selling a house, right? Yep. And they don't make money unless that house closes.
Yep.
So, you know, it's always kind of nerve wracking being 100% commission, but I've gotten to the point where it's like, she's got this process down. She might be nervous right now. I have 100% faith that she knows what she's going to be able to do and she's going to make it work. So,
yeah, you saw the lows, but you'll see these peaks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Just trying to minimize it as much as you can.
Awesome. Well, I don't want to take up any more of your time. Thanks so much for coming in. Honestly, really, really good conversation. I think hopefully some people learned a little bit about real estate, maybe some new potential agents out there. Because, it is one of those things where you don't have to have a college degree and you can make a lot of money.
Yep.
One of the agents in our office, or at least Mindy's office, his son just graduated from high school last year and got his real estate license and he's selling now. He's like, why go to college? I can do this. So,
I'm kind of anti-college. So,
yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
We will talk to you later.
Yep. Thanks. Okay.